Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence and Development Corporate. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. Last week, I facilitated a tutorial and delivered a new keynote to over 800 people at the Star East Conference in Orlando. It had been a while since our family had visited Florida, so I had the opportunity to bring my wife and three children along, which was great. Now, between speaking engagements, we had the opportunity to spend some time at Disney. And if you spent any time at a Disney park, chances are customer service and quality come to mind. You know, people at Disney, they just know how to be great on the job. They seem patient when they're demanding customers and seemingly cool under the heat of the Florida sun. Well, what does it take for you and for me to be great on the job? As it turns out, there's a book by that name that's coming out this week by Jody Glickman. I had the opportunity to catch up with Jody recently and look forward to sharing that interview about her book with you this week. I'm joined today by Jody Glickman. Jody is an entrepreneur, author, public speaker, consultant, and communications expert. Jody's gone from being a Peace Corps volunteer in Chile to an investment banker for Goldman Sachs and to a policy analyst at the US EPA, even a stint at the White House. I first became familiar with Jody's work through her blogging for Harvard Business Review, where I personally maintain she's one of the most entertaining and insightful writers on the blog, by the way. And today we're talking about Jody's new book coming out this week entitled Great on the Job, What to Say, How to Say It, The Secrets of Getting Ahead. Jody, thank you for joining us for the People and Projects Podcast.
Andy, thank you so much. It's great to be here, and thank you for the lovely and generous introduction.
Yeah, my pleasure. Hey, you know what? Today, to this date, one of my favorite books remains Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he states there that 15% of our success, that's it, comes from our technical or professional skills, and that the rest of it is based on our people skills. And that was back in, what, it must have been the 30s or 40s? Mm-hmm, and so What I'm wondering is, from your perspective, Jody, how close are Carnegie's numbers in today's world?
God, that's such an interesting question, Andy. I think they're pretty close. I mean, I am absolutely of that mindset. I do not think technical skills are what get you promoted or compensated well. I think of technical skills as check-the-box skills. You need them. You need to know how to do your job well. You need to be competent. You need to be technically proficient. But the truth is, everyone expects that as a baseline. And competition today is so tough. There are so many brilliant people out there in this global economy that being technically proficient will really never set you apart from the crowd. And so in my mind, I always thought of it, especially as an investment banker, which was a very highly technical field, and going through business school as a social policy person, right? I had no technical training or background whatsoever. I always felt a little bit at a disadvantage, but the truth is that those technical skills, whatever they are in your profession, you need to master them to the extent that they're good. They check the box, you get the work done, but you will never lead teams. You will never get promoted. You will never win new business, develop relationships with people based on your technical skills. And all of those soft skills that are really so hard to grasp on some level or quantify, those are the skills that I think really sort of fall into that tipping point category of how do you move ahead in your career, how do you get promoted, how do you get compensated well, how do you get assigned to the star teams or the big projects or the high profile deals.
Yeah. You know, I used to present this in workshops. What I'd say is, unless it's brain surgery, then I'd like them flipped, But actually, I had a good friend who went through just a terrible thing with her husband, who went through chemo, and he ended up dying. And we were talking about the doctor that was the primarily in charge. And for some reason, we got on this subject about, bedside manner. And she goes, the amazing thing is he's brilliant. But what really makes a difference to us here is his bedside manner. And so even in a highly technical thing like that.
Absolutely. But I'm always so amazed by Sanjay Gupta, right? The CNN medical correspondent. Right. He's traveling all over the world, and he's a brain surgeon. I mean, the truth is, I don't want Sanjay Gupta doing my brain surgery, yeah. God forbid. But why is he in his position? Probably not because he's the best surgeon. Huh. He is so personable. He's great at communicating. He's great at synthesizing a lot of information and boiling it down so people can understand it. All of those skills and qualities have sort of catapulted him, in my mind, to the forefront of health leading expert on the topic. Yeah. So I don't think it's those technical skills, even in that situation. But, you know, absolutely, you want people who've got bedside manner.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you'd know better on this one, Jody, but my experience is the schools haven't traditionally done a great job at developing these skills. And my understanding is you get to pour into those that are just entering the workforce. At least that's part of your business. And what are a couple of the top lessons that you try to get across to these new professionals that they're not learning in their classes typically?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you. I would agree with you. I do not think they're learning them at school. They're not learning them in an undergraduate program. They're not learning them in a graduate degree program for business, for law, for accounting. It's not happening.
Yeah.
And I think a couple of the things where I try and go in and really give people permission. I think part of it is saying to folks, listen, you've probably never been taught this. You may not have learned it if you didn't have a great role model at home or at work or in some type of corporate setting. And so if you haven't learned it, it's okay. But let's learn it now. Let's talk about it now because it's going to be important and you're going to need it. And one of the things I talk about that I think is so important is asking for help.
Yeah.
People at junior levels are so afraid to ask for help, and they don't want to appear foolish. They don't want to seem stupid. They don't want to put their foot in the mouth. All of those things I understand. But the truth is, if you don't ask for the guidance you need, how can you be successful?
Yeah.
You want to set yourself up for success, not for failure. And one of the ways you do that is by asking for the support and guidance you need.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the key is to do it in a smart way, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say, how should I do this? It's to say, you know what, here's where I am with this project. Here's where I'm thinking of moving, the direction I'm thinking of moving in. What do you think of that approach?
Yeah.
Does it sound like the right approach to you? You know, state your plan and then get the buy-in of your team.
Mm-hmm.
Or to backtrack, if you're at the beginning of a process and you really don't know how to do something, then it's a be proactive, right? Go back to Dale Carnegie. Thanks, that sounds great. I'd love to get involved. I've actually never done anything like that before. I'd love if you have a template to look at, if you have someone I can speak with, if you have some ideas of what you'd like this to look like so that I can make sure I'm moving in the right direction, right? Ask for resources or guidance, but do it in a smart way. Show that you're excited about it and proactive, and then say, you know what, instead of coming back to you with a final deliverable in 3 weeks, why don't I put together some bullet points to make sure we're on the same page?
Yeah.
Or why don't I put together a draft or an outline, get you to sign off on it, and then I'll go back and finish it. So you can ask for help and sound smart. You know, in my opinion, if I know someone doesn't know how to do something and they don't ask for help, I don't think they have good judgment. So I want to encourage that in young employees. It is really important to be set up for success, to make sure you can do your job well. Ask for the resources you need to do something well.
Well, that is such good advice. You know, Jody, one of the things we found when we first did some outsourcing, this would have been in the mid-90s on the software side, that some cultures, there's even more cultural aspect to this that they don't want to ask for help. And if I do this, mm-hmm. I won't look like I know what I'm doing. And increasingly, what you find is the people who don't ask for help are the people that are going to just spin their wheels, so to speak,
right.
and really, really struggle. And so keeping that in mind when it's us, not somebody else.
Yes, and that is U.S.-specific. In fairness, I think that is very different in different cultures. And when I talk, I'm typically talking about working in a U.S. company or corporation and being in this environment where I do think it is okay and tolerated to ask for the help you need.
Yeah. But the spirit of proactiveness is something mm-hmm. that I noticed in the book. And whether someone's new to a company or new to a role, you talk about being strategically proactive. So what do you mean
yep.
by that? And maybe some practical suggestions if they're going to start a new opportunity with momentum.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, listen, I think you and I have spoken about this in the past, that taking initiative is one thing, right? And everyone should take initiative. But I try and give really tactical, practical advice. It's not theory or high level. It's hard to say to someone, be confident,
yeah.
you know, or take initiative. What does that really mean? But when I talk about being strategically proactive, what I'm talking about is something called the LEARN strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And what the LEARN strategy is that you are in control. You are more in control of your career and your workflow than you may think. And what I always encourage young professionals to do is to think about their workload and think about opportunities to create an opportunity to either learn a new skill, excel at something you're good at, assist others, redirect unwanted work, and or network with people who are well-regarded or well-connected within your organization. And if you think of your own sort of projects within that learn concept or that scope of learn, right, you can figure out ways to either get up the learning curve quickly by learning new skills. You can figure out ways to showcase your talents and prove you're a star by offering to work on something that you know you're good at, excelling at something you're good at doing.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have good work right now, but you just want to be the team player. Why not go and offer to assist someone with something that's not really sexy or fun or terribly high profile, but it will show you to be a good team player, and someone will likely return that favor later on. Maybe you're getting a lot of crappy assignments. You need to start redirecting that work by letting people know, hey, I have other ideas of things I'd like to get involved in. Let's figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah.
And finally, maybe it's networking and saying, you know what? I really would like an opportunity to work with Tom. Let's talk about making that happen in the next 3 months. People who are strategically sort of calculated about asking for the assignments they want or making sure they work on things that are going to showcase their talents, they will do better in the workplace.
But you know, there's a lot of that where it doesn't exist, that proactive. It's almost like, well, I'm waiting for the information, or no one's asked me to do this. And I think one of the many things people are going to get from your book, Jody, is you know what? It's not my boss's job. It's not my spouse's job. This is my job to say, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to learn that skill. Even if it takes me this year, I'm going to volunteer for an opportunity to do this. I'm going to grow, but I'm going to take responsibility myself to do it. That's a key part of your message.
That's absolutely right. And I have a quote in the book by a managing director / partner on Wall Street who said, no one cares more about managing your career than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always taken that advice to heart. It's true. It's no one else's responsibility to make sure you get good work or good projects.
Yeah.
The only way to make it happen is to raise your hand. And there's always going to be people who get the great plum assignment, so why not make it be you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the people who are listening, Jody, they're responsible for managing projects or leading teams. It could be project manager by title, could be sponsor, could be team members. But there are a lot of communications-related scenarios that can be kind of tricky for them. And a lot of times, the way that they were brought up, either career-wise or even from school, they're not taught that. So let's take a couple scenarios. Let's say there's a listener named John, and he's been given a project by his boss. And the project came also with this due date that just doesn't seem reasonable, whether it's time or cost. And it's not just maybe a little bit. It's by a lot of it. It's just clear it's not reasonable. So what are some ways for John to best respond?
So that's a great question. And John is all too common, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just backtrack for one moment and say there are four key themes that are sort of the backdrop of great on the job. And they are generosity, initiative, forward momentum, and transparency. And I would argue they are sort of the cornerstone of all good communicators. Being generous means sharing credit. It means sharing information readily. It means being, understanding and acknowledging of other people's agendas and calendars, things like that. Taking initiative, we've spoken about. Forward momentum, how are you moving the ball forward? It's your responsibility, not someone else's. And then lastly, transparency, and that comes into play here with, a deadline that is just not realistic. So the thing I would say to John, first and foremost, is you need to raise the issue with your boss immediately so that you can push back. Because what you don't want to do, again, is set yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is to be transparent and say, love the assignment, can't wait to get started, think this is a great project. Here's what realistically we can do in this time frame, right? I've sat down and I've thought about the resources it's going to take, the kind of work product I want to produce, what the end result is going to be. Here's the outline of what I can do and when I can do it by and what the resources are I'll need. So you lay everything out on the table so it is totally clear.
Yeah.
And then you say to your boss, John, here's what can be done by this date. Let's figure out how we can get to a point where you get what you need by that date, because it's not possible on my end alone. I mean, the goal is to, right, it's not to say to John, I can't do it. It's to say to John, here's what can be done realistically without some, Herculean intervention. Here's what can be done. Let's figure out, get John invested in the process. Let's figure out how to make it happen in a way you need it to happen by this date, because realistically, we're going to be set up to fail. And I think if you don't do that, you run the risk of over-promising and under-delivering, and I would argue there's nothing worse in business.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think it's I think it's better to take the hit early. I think it's better for you to have to go to your boss and say, listen, I will work my tail off, right? I will work 24/7. I have the best team. We are the best team to do this. But here's the thing. Just can't happen on this timeline.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are the things where bosses are not able, in my mind. They have to say, all right, what do I need to do to make this happen?
Yeah. Yeah. But when you show that initiative, like we've talked about, that's a whole different thing as opposed to being the no guy or the no lady, right?
You're not right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was being walked through a company here in the Chicago area by a CEO, and she introduced me to a bunch of people. We go back to her office, and she said, "Do you remember that?" She mentioned a project manager that she introduced me to, and I go, "Yeah." She goes, "He's the no guy." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "It seems like no matter what the question is, the answer is no. You know, are we going to hit the date? No. Can you come to the meeting? No, I'm busy. Can we add the scope? No. You know." And I asked her, "How's that working for him?" And she goes, "You know what? It's one of those things. He's about ready to get fired." And we're not, I don't think either of us are saying, no, you can't say no. That's not it, because if it's ethical or safety or whatever. But there are other ways to say no, right? There are other ways to be transparent and take the initiative, say, this is what I can do, and be known for that other than what we can't do. Am I summarizing you right?
Absolutely. And I think it's, you're the yes, but. Right?
Yeah,
I'm not
right.
The no. I'm the yes, I'll do it, but let's be realistic about what the timing and expectations are. Here's what I can do. Absolutely. I mean, it is not being no, but I do think that if you don't manage that level of expectation and get the buy-in of everyone on board and make sure they know, because the reason you can't get something done, it's typically two reasons, right? It's you either lack time or you lack resources.
Right.
Whichever it is, it's not something you can solve on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You need to bring in your boss, but I absolutely agree with you. You never want to be the no man, the no woman, the no anything.
You know, here's another one. Let's say it's Kathy, and Kathy's a project manager, and she's dependent on a coworker. Now, this is somebody that she doesn't have any sort of role power over, and she's dependent on this other person delivering, but this other person really doesn't have the same sense of urgency. And it maybe almost feels like she's asking this person to do a favor, even though it may not purely be a favor, but she needs help from this person, but she can't just go kick her butt. So, well, you know, can you say how you'd advise Kathy in this sort of situation?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a tougher one, I think. So I think what you need to do in that case is you need to communicate. So it's Kathy is the person who we're talking about.
She's the project manager, and she needs work out of somebody else.
Okay. So, right. So I think Kathy needs to go to her colleague and communicate from her end the sense of urgency, right? I mean, I don't know whether or not this other colleague actually understands or realizes that there is this sense of urgency. So I think Kathy needs to have a conversation, which is, hey, we've got this big project. It's due next week. I'm actually getting a little nervous about timing and results and output.
Mm-hmm.
Want to have a conversation with you to make sure that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it is all about the being on the same page with someone to share your expectations and find out where her colleague is so that her colleague can say to her, well, you know what? I don't think it's so important. I'll probably have it in 2 weeks. That at least opens the door for Kathy to say, you know what? That's probably not going to work. Let's talk about this.
Right.
Or for her to say, oh, well, that's interesting. I was under the impression that actually it is urgent. Maybe we need to bump this up and make sure we're both on the same page. I mean, I think as opposed to making it an I versus you,
right.
Here's where I think we are. Where do you think we are? Let's figure out how to get on the same page. And so if Kathy's colleague is sort of wishy-washy or resistant, at least Kathy then has something to go back to either her boss with and say, listen, I'm working on this. You know, Sarah doesn't think she's going to have it in time. I obviously am not Sarah's boss. You know, can we talk about ways to handle this? That might be an approach. But I think it's communicating your expectation to Sarah very clearly and saying to Sarah, you know, let's talk about whether or not we're on the same page. And if we're not, how do we get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think your four areas really apply. And I hadn't really thought of it the way you presented, but I think it makes a lot of sense. So where the generosity could be along the lines of, hey, you know what, Sarah, I'm on your team here, right? It's you know, we're in this together.
Well,
I know you're really busy,
team.
Right? Like you said, it's not a me versus you, but it's also this initiative. And I got to tell you, Jody, I have failed so many times on this one where I assumed the person would do it, or I hope they would do it, right? But I didn't take the initiative to follow up.
Chicken berm. And I think that's why when I say, And I'm very tactful and diplomatic in the workplace. I'm not comfortable with conflict. I don't like conflict. And so I recognize sometimes when people will say to me, well, you know, God, that's not realistic or that's not harsh enough. But the truth is, I think 90% of the time, it's misunderstanding or it's assumptiveness on our part that causes the problem. We assume Sarah knows how urgent this is, and Sarah thinks it's as urgent as we do. And Sarah is assuming that we are just as laid back and casual about it.
Yes.
And so it really does. You're right. It takes the initiative to have that conversation to say, let's just make sure we're on the same page here. Here's what I think. Here's where I am. And are you and I on the same boat? Because if we're not, let's get in tandem. Because again, we're all playing for the same team.
You know, I got to tell you, Jody, a mentor just recently told me this. He goes, his experience is so much of conflict, so much disappointment, whether it be in marriage, whether it be in work relationships, whether it be in projects, comes down to missed expectations, and often they were unstated. And so if people follow this advice that you have in the book of, listen, take the initiative, be transparent. This is what it is.
Be transparent.
Yeah. And one of the things I found is I often would say, this is important, this is important. You know, it's like the person who sends their email where the exclamation points always on right after a while. You don't pay attention to that. But what I didn't communicate the consequences of inaction, of saying, hey, you know what, this is what happens if it doesn't, and it's not a threat. I'm just saying, if we can't do it, let's come up with a solution. You're moving it forward. You're the forward momentum. I think that formula is a really good one there, Jody.
And, you know, I was speaking to a Times reporter a couple of weeks ago for an article in the Sunday Business section on pointing fingers and laying blame. And what I expressed to her, I really don't care about blame, and I don't even care. Credit is more important. I think you need to share credit readily. It's not about blame, and it's not about problems. All it's about is solutions, right? All I care about at the end of the day is getting you and I to the same position of saying, let's make it work. And so whatever it does to get it there, I'm willing to take one for the team and not say I'm right and you're wrong, but just say, here's where I'm living. Here's what I'm thinking. Where are you? Let's circle up. Let's get on the same page. That's what I care about. Right? It's not wrong or right or pointing fingers.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, if we can maintain that, because the world around us is not necessarily wired that way, right? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the workplace isn't that way. I was with a company here in the Chicago area. One of their core values was transparency. And I was talking to a senior executive, and she said, all right, I'm going to try this out. And she's very transparent about something. And she actually felt like she got dinged for being transparent. So all of this is easy to talk about in the real world, but what we have to realize, or easy to talk about when we're not talking about real world scenarios, but I think what you've laid out in your book are these are practical ways that, yes, it can be implemented. This is not just something for a whiteboard here. It is possible to be transparent. It is possible to not worry about the blame and put the focus on solutions. It's how you look at it.
Okay? Yes. And listen, and I'm sure, I mean, and I'd be curious to hear offline, we can continue the conversation, but, you know, when does transparency blow up in your face? But really, to get things done in an organization, people need to know your motives. They need to know your goals, your agenda, your objectives, what the results are planning to be, because if they don't know it, they feel disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get work done when you don't have that support of the entire team.
No doubt. You know, Jody, something I've noticed, whether it's with myself or the experts I interview on the podcast, but it can be easy for us to dish out advice, right? But it can be difficult to sometimes practice what we preach, so to speak. So of all the advice that you share in your book, your workshops, your keynotes, what would you say is the most difficult for you to follow yourself?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I have a huge smile on my face, right? Thinking of all of the things that are really challenging for me to do. I'm going to go with transparency when there's conflict. I still, to this day, I have a very hard time calling people out on an issue when it's a tough issue.
Yeah.
And so I can be very generous. I take the initiative. I can always move the ball forward. For instance, I have a woman working with me right now as an advisor, and I didn't think she was living up to her standards and what was in our contract.
Yeah.
And I had it sort of laid out to have this conversation with her. And when we spoke, she had sort of preempted the conversations with all the things she was planning on doing for the next couple of weeks. And I accepted it and thought, okay, she's going to make a change. And I didn't sort of dig down. I thought, why go to the negative?
Yeah.
So that probably was not the best decision on my part. So I would say that for me, being transparent and confronting people when I don't think they're living up to expectations is really still the biggest challenge I have in running my own business.
Yeah. I hear you. You know, something I learned from Tony Schwartz when we were talking was he talked about, I think he called it the rule of triggers. And so I'm giving you my answer to this question.
Yep.
Is the idea of something along the lines of, if you feel like you're so compelled, like I have to get this out. When you feel like you must say it, don't. Was kind of it is, and I'm sure there are exceptions to that. But just yesterday, I was in a situation where I was really upset about something that that a colleague had done, and I knew that if I would just take 5 minutes and breathe deep and just get it all together before I have the conversation, I'd do a better job. But no, I didn't follow it. And sometimes when it comes to communicating, it's what we learn with our kids, right? Let's just take a little time out here.
Absolutely. That's so smart. That is spot on. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I just wish I would have listened to my own preaching on that.
Right.
One.
Well, listen, we can, in retrospect, we are all very brilliant and very smart and very successful. So hindsight is 2020 for a reason. There's always learning. I love Great on the Job. I love this content. I love teaching it and sharing it with young people, but I am by no means immune. And I have lots of lessons. I'm still always continually learning.
Yeah. And that is one of the things I love about your writing, actually, is how transparent you are. I giggled over one you had about how you're not a good speller or something.
Yes.
Like that, right?
Yes. I was getting hosed on my HBR posts. People had responded to me and written emails saying it is very unprofessional. I'm very offended. You have all of these spelling mistakes. And I was offended. And then I thought, God, I am a terrible speller. I've always been a terrible speller. I try really hard. Yeah. And then I thought, there's a blog post here, right? Yeah. Everyone's got their weaknesses.
Exactly.
What we do is we compensate. We try and figure out, okay, what can I work around and what can I work through?
Yeah.
You sort of just go through it. So, yes, that was a fun one to write, for sure.
Jody, it's a real pleasure to talk with you today. For those who are listening and you want to improve your ability to succeed in the workplace, I invite you to get a copy of Jody's new book available this week. It's called Great on the Job, What to Say, How to Say It, The Secrets of Getting Ahead. I also recommend you check out Jody's organization by the same name, Great on the Job. You can find links to her book, her blog, as well as her company in the show notes for this cast. Jody, I really enjoyed our discussion today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Andy. This was great. Have a great day.
Make sure to check out the links in the show notes for Jody's new book as well as her website. I've also included a link to her HBR blog. Quick note, our Leadership Fast Track program, it's filling up very nicely. And I would love to have a few more podcast listeners join me. This program includes learning sessions that I facilitate live over the web, as well as one-on-one coaching sessions with me. It'd be such a privilege for me to have you be a part of this program. So check the link in the show notes for details. Well, thank you for joining me for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast. Have yourself a great week.
I haven't stuck my head out yet today, but I'm seriously ready for some global warming, man. This cold has just gone on too long here in Chicago.
This has been awful. I can't believe we moved from New York a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So I guess I had my first winter here last winter. This has been unbelievable. I can't believe my kids are on spring break right now, and it is so far from spring.
Yeah.
they're ready for sandals and flip-flops and dresses, and I said, it's pretty much the winter.
Yeah, it's not going to happen yet. Oddly enough, my oldest is 16. He actually likes the winter, and he goes, "Dad, I'm really bummed the snow's gone because I like going skiing." And as much as you can ski in the northern
right.
Illinois, but still, so I think it's kind of ironic yet that they're mourning the end of winter. But
it has been long.
I've appreciated your writing from afar. And,
you're so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Jody, you do a really nice job of transparency and yet practical. A lot of times, especially on HBR, it gets a lot of theory there at times.
Theory, absolutely. I try and be. It's funny. I'm literally just finishing one to send to my editor right now, and it is a little bit less practical than normal. And I'm wondering, my note to her is going to be like, is this okay? Because I hate theory. I'm all about, tactical, practical.
I don't know. I can tell that as you write.
That's nice to hear. Thank you.
I've changed my Facebook strategy in some ways to, I add people to a group called Special, if I don't really know who they are. And so they don't see any of the other stuff.
I think that's very smart because it's hard to manage it all. And you want to have good open discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But you also don't want it to get hijacked.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a really interesting article and really.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, I am here. I'm pulling up your Facebook page. It's hard to. I haven't sort of mastered Facebook yet and figuring out how to engage people on that medium. So I'll have to spend some time checking out yours.
You know, it's really worth it, Jody. In that, for example, I mean, we'll get something like 5,000 to 6,000 downloads of the podcast a month. Before I started using social media to promote it, it might be 1,000 downloads. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, so it is another outlet for people to kind of get to know you and be exposed. I sometimes it feels like the people who are most on Twitter have the most time on their hands. You know,
That's so funny because I wonder the same thing. I think to myself, you know, my book publicists have been talking about Twitter, and I said, what do you guys think of Facebook? And they said, well, we're really more into Twitter. And I thought, I think we're just talking to each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think it's not the same. I feel like it's every sort of talking head talking at each other.
I know there are exceptions to it, but Jody, I really feel strong. You know what I use is a website called ping.fm, ping.fm. And what you can do is you can tie your Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn.
Oh, right.
And Hootsuite. There's a bunch of them that are out there. Like, anyway. Yep. I forgot to do this before we got on the phone. I'm interviewing Jody Glickman about her upcoming book, Great on the Job. And it goes out to 15 different places. So I don't have to go to all those places, but it puts it out there. And so I found that pretty helpful. So.
Well, I use Hootsuite. I just friended you on Facebook.
So we will now be
connected.
So I won't put you in the group called Special. How about that? So
Thank you.
I have great respect for what you're doing, Jody. You're a great voice out there. I think it's a voice that's needed, and I wish you a lot of success with this book.
Thank you. You are so kind. Well, anything I can do to return the favor, I'm thrilled to be part of the podcast.
Thank you.
So you'll send me the links, and we will stay in touch.
Thank you very much, Jody. See ya.
Thanks, Andy. Great speaking with you. Bye-bye. Bye.